Today, we have a very special guest. It's Sunny, Sora's sister.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
They're the besties, okay? So today, we wanted Sunny to be a part of this episode because we recognized that earlier this month in October, October 10th was World Mental Health Day. Mm-hmm. And when I think of mental health, no offense, but I think of Sunny in a good way. Sora and I just thought, like, this is the perfect opportunity to bring you onto the pod.
Well, thanks for having me.
Sunny, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us about you, your age, and who you are.
Hi, my name is Sunny. I'm just turned 27, and I am currently back in school because I dropped out. And I am also working, going to school, and just living life.
Love it. We're excited for you to be here.
Yeah.
And we're going to just tackle into our experiences of mental health.
Okay. Some crying might happen, but it's cool.
Let's do it.
You know what? We're here for it.
I love crying.
So like Jen said, October 10th was Mental Health Day.
Mm-hmm.
World Mental Health Day. To start off, what are some struggles or challenges that you guys have faced?
Sunny, you should go first.
Okay, so I have gone through a plethora of mental health challenges, I would say. When it started, when I was in 16, I overdosed and I went to a mental hospital for 8 days. And that really kind of solidified what I was going to do for the rest of my life, which is figure out who I am, like what I live for and what works for me. During that time, they didn't know what bipolar disorder was. So they diagnosed it as just depression. And so there was a lot of like weird stigma, kind of weird energy around it all, where it's like, oh, you're just depressed, take a pill, move on. But I knew that there was something more to it, and so which is why I took the time to really dive into figuring out what was going on with me. And so I sought out therapists, psychiatrists. I try to find more answers than just one.
Thanks for sharing about high level struggles of mental health that you've gone through. I know Sora and I have also gone through mental health in different ways. And I guess I'll just share mine. I guess growing up, there wasn't much mental health awareness. And any type of awareness I got from my parents was like, oh, just go pray about it. God will help you. So that was really where we got it. And I think all of my sisters and I have gone through a phase where we have either cut ourselves or been in a situation where we self-harmed just through any type of, like, the pressure you have as an Asian American and the first gen. So I think those times were really hard on us. And, you know, when you look back, it's just like, oh, it wasn't even that serious. But it feels like so much during the moment. Yeah. And there's no outlet. There's no one that you could share to that would understand, or there wasn't a safe space because everybody else was doing the exact same thing. So I think that's kind of what mental health looked like growing up for me specifically. But what about you, Sora?
For me, for majority of my life, there's a lot of things I blamed my mental health on. But what I've come to realize is that I had a problem feeling like I was loved and fully accepted, which in turn made me not love myself or fully accept myself. And for a long time, because we grew up in the church, in a very, not like a Mormon strict church, but like pretty strict in certain aspects, where they did kind of have a big hand on our child development and our how we grew up and our influence. So for a long time, I blamed the church. But I think in reality, it was a big indicator was, I think my parents' divorce actually affected me a lot more than I thought. Now that I'm a mom, I can see why. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't have my dad there who could give me that some
sort of like support and love. And then our mom had to work 24/7 to put food on the table for us. Mm-hmm. So I think that just made, as a kid, made me feel like I wasn't loved or accepted, and then made me go out and find that in other areas. So mm-hmm. that's where mental health really affected me, because it led into what I felt about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's deep.
That's so deep.
So serious. Why did you guys laugh?
It didn't sound deep when you commented on
it. It's a defense mechanism. Just laugh off.
It is a defense mechanism, which... I don't know if we do that a lot.
I just think
these podcasts.
I just think, like... It would have had taken so much work for you to recognize that that was the source that, you know, created the snowball effect, you know, because if you think about it, you're like, oh, it was the church. And then instead of victimizing the church, then you're looking within, and now you're looking at within and going back to the beginning. So I think that's why I was like saying it so deep, and I didn't mean it like in a sarcastic way.
No, it really is introspective.
It is. Yeah, for a long time I blamed them.
Yeah.
Because I was expecting them to be my parents.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, that wasn't even the root.
Yeah. Well, when you're a kid, you don't know, especially if your parents aren't there to share and to explain. Like, even to this day, I have maybe 5 stories of what my dad has gone through in his life, because he wants to protect us as his children, and he doesn't want to let us see that he struggled in life, you know? And I think that's where there's the start of the no sharing in the previous generation. So now that we're in our next generation trying to be better, we're sharing more. And like you said so many times, like, I want, like, your daughter, Emma, to know that it's okay to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Like, we're parents too. Like, it's okay. And so I just think it's all good stuff. And that was just deep. That's what I just gotta say.
I'm glad we're in a generation where we're sharing.
Mm-hmm.
I wish my parents had shared more in the past. Yeah. But, like, I get it. We were young. Mm-hmm. We couldn't understand. And I probably wouldn't have understood at the time. But mm-hmm. I'm glad that I know it now. Mm-hmm. At least, probably not the full story, but what they do tell us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think in Asian cultures, it's so, like, if you have anything wrong with your mental health, you're weak. Mm-hmm. Instead mm-hmm. of, like, there's a problem, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just automatic, like, oh, you're just weak-minded. You're sad, you're weak-minded. You're mad, you're weak-minded. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, I think it's actually, like, strong to be able to express how you feel because of how much people don't want to open up that vulnerability, that door.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. So that being said, what are some strategies you may have used to navigate through those mental health challenges? And these could be good strategies or bad strategies. Like, just what did you do to fight through it?
I think in the beginning I did a lot of drugs.
I think we can all attest to that.
I think drinking and, like, drugs and just trying to run away, like...
And numbing yourself.
Yeah, numbing yourself is... a way, but that way also taught me that that's not what I like.
Yeah.
Like, that it's not going to work. Like, I think for, like, me, I think I had to overindulge in it to be able to finally get out and be like, yeah, that didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. that did for a while, I thought would help me, because I thought I was happy in those times.
I agree.
I'm with you. I think it took me maybe 4 years ago to be like, hey, if I avoid it, I still have to deal with this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still going to bed at night thinking about it. I'm still not at peace with myself.
Yeah.
Because the times I am sober, I guess.
I agree.
I try to give my sisters that advice, like, hey, you know, when you're going through it, you should just go through it sober. Like, that is the toughest time to do it. But the moment you start going in the downfall of
numbing,
yeah, any type of numbing, then it just feels better, because you have a source to be temporarily happy.
Yeah. I think a huge method I used was fight or flight.
Mm.
Yeah.
That was like,
I'm either running away or we're dying tonight.
Literally, like that,
those are the only two options we have. You want to run or you want to die?
She literally would just be like, yeah, I booked a flight. I'm not going to come back. And then she'd be like, okay, I'm ready. I'll come back now.
I ran away from home so many times. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so tough.
Those are toxic challenges. Okay, but like, so what are strategies you use today to help you through mental health? The healthy ones.
One thing that Jen really helped instill into me, I want to say like 2019, is like goal setting. Like it sounds so cliche, but it's like once you know like what you're aiming for, what your purpose is, and what you want, then you can do steps every day. But I think the biggest problem was like I didn't know who I was, what I wanted, what I lived for. And so it's like, I think a plan, a structure, a schedule, like those things really do help you.
Mm-hmm. I think especially with mental health, because it's easy to stay home in bed, especially if you're, you know, in not a good mental place, to just let the days waste. Yeah. And so for you to be like, okay, today I'm going to do this, even if I don't feel like it, yeah, and to get out of bed and to just do it, even if you hate it, then it does make you feel at least productive, even if you're not happy.
Yeah, like a simple, like, I threw out my trash today. Like, check that off a list. Like, that does put serotonin in my brain that, like, mm-hmm, oh, okay, I'm proud of myself for not laying around mm-hmm all day.
Yeah. I can't believe that helped you. That makes me really happy.
So is that your strategy?
No.
What's your strategy?
I definitely love checklists because it makes me happy to check something off.
Oh, you love a good checklist.
I have a checklist for everything, but I actually just made a checklist for this weekend. But anyway, besides the point, that's not my strategy because I think I've always been in that mindset, so that doesn't make me feel better. Mm. Like, actually makes me feel worse because if I don't get things done, then I mentally beat myself up. Mm. But I'm working on that. And I think I have been a lot better ever since I've been a mom because I have very quickly realized that my life is no longer about me. And making the sacrifice for my children is what makes me happy. So it's okay. But for me, strategies that help me navigate is continuously thinking long term about, like, what did I write? Okay. Oh, it's okay to slow down and rest. And it's okay to take slow Sundays. And it's okay to do nothing. And for me to continuously remind myself that, because I'm a checklist girly, because I'm a productive person, I like to be on going a million miles per hour. And that's really what my work life is like, that I bring that home. Where I like to do a million things at home too and have a million tasks and projects because that's what it's like 9 hours in the daytime. So I just kind of keep that personality with me. And so for me to continuously like, okay, it is okay to do nothing. Mm-hmm. It's okay to rest. And I don't know how, I know it sounds like that is such an easy thing to do, but it's very, very hard for me. It's very hard for me. So me doing that, it gives me a mental break and rest. Because it's like, I can't take a nap or I can't go to sleep. Even last night, I woke up almost every single hour thinking about things I have to do for work. And I hate that I do that. Because I bring that into my personal life that I can't fully relax. I can't even sleep in peace, so. Those are just things that I do to help my mental health because my mental health is just different than yours and anybody else's.
Yeah.
But it's just to slow down.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on this, but I actually saw that study says if you have one do nothing day every week, it actually is beneficial for you.
I believe you.
Yeah. I don't know where the source is from, but
mom brain.
But I saw it.
Yeah. What about you?
It's just for me, a positive strategy is perspective.
I think perspective has changed a lot of things in my life because it's so easy to go down the negative route and being like, oh my God, I have this to do. And like, I couldn't do anything today because I had to take care of my baby all day or, you know, like XYZ. And I saw a video of someone talking about this actually. And it was like, if you shift it to, oh my God, I'm so grateful that I have the opportunity to spend with my child right now when I can, because one day they will not need me anymore. Mm-hmm. Or I'm so lucky that I have so many things that are going for me in life that, you know, like God has blessed me with. Mm-hmm. So I think perspective has helped because it's super easy for me to go the negative route. Next question, what do you think is the stigma surrounding mental health?
I think we talked about it a little bit before, but for Asians, it don't exist.
Yeah, it does.
For the longest time, it did not exist. I think until our parents now started realizing they can get depressed. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, now I kind of get what you were like.
I think our mom experienced it when she had menopause.
Yeah, and after our brother went to jail several times.
Yeah, but even then, I don't feel like she knew.
Well, she would, like, express to me, like, I feel this deep pain of sad. She was like, I think I understand what you're going through. And I was like, sit with it another month and then you'll understand. And then after a while, she was like, yeah, what you went through, if it was like that, she was like, I can't imagine going through that for longer than that period of time.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah, in Asian families, it's hard to accept.
I think also for me, I remember growing up and whenever I was really close to one of my aunts, and whenever I would cry to her or share with her, because she was my safe space besides my mom. Like at that time growing up, my mom was very different than who she is now. So we didn't have a safe space to share with her. And when I was sharing with my aunt and I would cry to her, she would say like, why are you crying? If you're going to call me, don't cry. And I wouldn't have a space to cry. And, you know, I took my role because of what was ingrained to me. And I'm super emotional today. Just a lot of estrogen because I'm pregnant. And on top of that, I already cried today. So the tears are probably going to come. But I remember, like, even now, I feel like this, that, like, I'm the oldest, so I want to set the this amazing example for my sisters. And if I cry in front of them and they don't see I'm strong and watching what my mom is putting all of us through, like, I can't be their rock. And that's what it felt like growing up. Like, I couldn't share with them. I didn't, not because they didn't give me a safe space, but because it was just the pressure of being, like, my mom used to say, like, you're the front of the train. If you make any wrong decisions, all of your sisters are gonna follow you. And that's so much pressure for a kid. And like, I mean, like I told you guys before in the other episodes, I was basically a mom at like 13 years old. So having that pressure at a young age, I couldn't cry anywhere. And my aunt would be like, do you know what we even went through? Like, for you to think like this is a lot, like for them to come to America and to learn a new language and start all over. And the amount of times they try to leave Vietnam, it being sent to jail. Like, I couldn't put myself like, I can't feel like this because they went through so much more. You know, and to think like, okay, you guys went through all that. Like, I can't, like, my struggles are nothing compared to what they went through. So it was really hard growing up. And so I think the stigma around my family was like, just top it up, we're doing it. Like, you have no choice. Like, this is it. Like, you either do it or you don't. Like, there's no mental health. There's no mental struggles. It's just do it or don't, I guess. And so I don't think, like, in an outside world, I couldn't even think that part because I didn't have a place
in my own life. And because we move so much as kids, and I'm sure you guys relate to this, it's like you don't even have friends because you move so much. And for us to be in private schools and to be the only Asians in those private schools, like there's no one that would relate to what I'm going through in a very Catholic private school. And so it was just very hard. And that's why I said, like, it took me about 4 years ago to realize, like, hey, numbing doesn't work, and I'm almost 30. So it's just, like, there's just the stigma for outside world is obviously there, but it's just internally in the family, it was also there. Like, it's non-existent. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, whatever you're going through doesn't even compare what they went through. And it almost was, like, how could... It was like, there was just no safe space to share.
I want to comment on what you just said, because that's a thing that a lot of our, like, Gen O parents have said, you know, like, they were the immigrants that mm-hmm. came to America and had to endure a lot of different types of heartaches and hardships than we did. But your hardships are just as fair and enough and is worthy of you struggling through not having to be compared to them. It's just different.
I do.
It's different hardships.
I agree.
But it doesn't make yours any less.
Yeah.
Hard. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I mean, that's what therapy's for. Safe space for you to share all the things that hurt you that you forgot about because you mentally blocked it out.
Well, at least for me.
At least for me, I mentally blocked it off because I have so much going on right now that I'm not thinking about, oh, well, what did I go through at 10 years old or what have you. So,
yeah. Also adding on to that, I think another stigma is crying is weak, which it's not. Like, I think the strongest people are the ones who are able to be vulnerable and show their emotion.
I just hate that ugly cry. I wish I was a cute crier.
I don't think there's Kim K ugly cry.
I'm just saying, it's fine. I don't care that I cry. I just want to stay happy than cry. But it's good because I think every single time I cry on the pod, it's like, okay, we're really hitting like a deep place. And our friendships and our besties online are just learning about us more and hopefully relating to what we're talking about. Okay, Sunny, wanted to circle back. The beginning of this episode, you mentioned that you left the mental hospital and then you're diagnosed with bipolar disorder. So how long did it take for you to get diagnosed with all the doctors, like with your disorder? Because everyone thought it was depression.
Yeah, so during that period, they told me that, basically said that I was lying because when I got to the mental hospital after overdosing, I was like, I don't know why I did that. I regret that. I really shouldn't be here. I want to go home. Like, I love my life and everything. And so for all those 8 days, they just kept trying to like break me. They said, we're going to try again. Don't lie to us. We know you're sad. Just be honest. So bipolar disorder was not really like studied or known at that time. And so they just categorized all of us, everybody, under depression. Like, if something was wrong with you, anxiety, whatever, you just have depression. And so I knew that that wasn't true. Like, I knew that it had to be something else because like, I wasn't just sad all the time. Like, there were times where I would get really manic and like feel on top of the world, do like 10 different hobbies and activities at once and then burn myself out and then become depressed. So it took a while. That was in 2016. And that I was 16 years old, and it wasn't until 2018 that I was like, okay, I need to go get like real help. Like, people around me were like, as much as they love me and try to help me, they're like, I think you need to seek like professional help because it wasn't enough to just confide in people and tell them my problems and things like that. It was like, had to actively start and search. And then that started my journey of like starting medications and figuring out the medications. So after I left the hospital, it was 2 years, got diagnosed. And then for a year, I was on medications, trying different ones every 3 months and like just trying to figure out what worked for me, how to make the situation better, like curated it to like to my life and like what I needed.
And how was like trying to find the right doctor for you? Because I know if you kept on going and this disorder wasn't, it's not a thing yet, or people aren't educated about it, then how long did it take you to find the right doctor to diagnose you?
Well, I say this to anybody who's looking for a therapist or psychiatrist, kind of look at it as like speed dating. You don't need to, people get fixated on like needing to find the perfect therapist or the perfect this. And it's like, you need to figure out what works with you. And so I went to about 5 different doctors, psychiatrists, therapists, like, There were so many that I tried until I found one that I liked at the time. And then I kind of started changing the way that like I, you know, went about my life and was like, okay, our values don't match up the same. My goals aren't the same as like what you're trying to do with your patients. So let me look somewhere else. So it really is just growing with yourself. Mm-hmm. And you have to evaluate yourself and be like, okay, is this working for me? Should I try something different? Should I try something new? I think being stuck in the same place is what can make people afraid. But if you're aware that your life is on you, this mm-hmm. is your responsibility, I think figuring out the best option is so important.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Okay, well, how long did it take you to adjust to the medications that were prescribed to you then?
Well, each set or like combination or rounds of medication takes up to 2 to 3 months to really kick into your system. And so I went through around like 4 or 5 different types of medications. Which ones worked? The first ones made me shake really badly. I was like, not okay. I couldn't eat on another one. I ate too much on the other one. It was a very tedious process of like journaling and jotting down what I felt every single day to keep track. But I think it was so worth it to finally, when I finally found the ones that worked, mm-hmm. and those were the ones I stayed on for about 6 years.
Yeah.
Until this year, I decided that I wanted to find more holistic and long, like I thought about the longevity of my life. It was very difficult to be on medications every single day. And I did feel after a certain point, you do feel numb. Mm-hmm. In a sense, like where you're just relying on it, where it's like you're not even trying to think for the day anymore. You just wake up and you're like, oh, where are my meds? My meds will fix everything. Mm-hmm. And I stopped wanting to be like that. Like I saw it as like a nice crutch to help me heal and figure out, you know, what I was going through. But I definitely don't think that, you know, every person is the same. But for me, I didn't want that for my life where I was constantly on meds forever. Mm-hmm. And these medications can rack up. Like they can get up to, at one point when I didn't have insurance, it went to about $1,000 a month. This is just not sustainable for mm-hmm. my mental health. Now I'm having to try to find another job or figure out how to get money for these meds. And now I'm going even more crazy. So now I'm at a place where I'm trying to find real solutions than just another numbing, helping mechanism. Mm.
What are the solutions that's helped you this year going off your meds? Which I'm so proud of you because I know how hard that is.
Yeah.
Like that's so routine. For 6 years, that's like longer than college.
No, I really do feel like I am just now learning myself again. Because I turned 27 this year. It was 6 years, I was like, so young, like beginning of my 20s is mm-hmm. when I really started like taking these medications every single day, going about this every single day consistently. Because there are a lot of times in the beginning that I would miss it, that I would like skip it on accident, lose them or whatever. So it wasn't consistent to begin with. But now that it had been so consistent, I was like, okay, what are things that I've learned from these past years that I can take and now implement, but on an even harder scale? So like keeping myself on a routine, making sure that I go to the gym, like things that really that I have to actively try every single day. So one thing that I like to do every single day is look for glimmers. And so those are things that will make me smile, whether it's a snack or like a food or like people talking on the phone with a friend or doing an activity. I have to do at least one thing that will make my mind have a glimmer of a smile, because I know that I'm more susceptible to be, you know, rolled down like a snowball of like a bad thought and be in a bad place. Actively try to find glimmers throughout my day. And I think that like it is truly like waking up and being intentional about like your purpose, like making plans, being on a schedule and goal setting, like really helped me also stay focused and what I want in my life. And so it helps me at least look at that and be able to go through to those goals, even if in the day I'm not feeling it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing, Sunny. I think that was such good feedback and good perspective, because I'm sure a lot of people have struggled with, this isn't the right medication for me. And I remember when the doctor tried to prescribe me depression medication, and I remember very clearly, like in that moment, I did not feel depressed, and I know what depression feels like. So for you to diagnose me with that and to try to give me medicine and throw medicine at me when I didn't feel like that at that time of my life, I just felt like, how can I trust that you're going to give me the right prescription for later?
Yeah.
Because you're trying to diagnose me with something that I do have occasionally throughout my life, but I tried to actively not fall short in that, not like, you know, it's active work to keep yourself in a good mental place.
Yeah. I think one thing that big pharma and like a lot of doctors, therapists, and psychiatrists, they'll give you the tools to help just numb it, but they don't really try to push you to get out of it. Like, I remember a therapist that I had, I would constantly be like, what should I do to not feel like this anymore? And she would just keep saying, well, just think about it and we'll talk about it our next session. It was always a next session, your next medications, your next this. And so it's like being aware that like, if you're ready to get out of it, you know, there's a difference between being in a rut and needing help and then realizing you need the help and trying to find a solution later. You know, some people, the phrase like, I can't help you if you don't want to help yourself. A lot of people aren't ready to help themselves yet, and they need the medications to kind of like calm them down or get them through that period of their time. But no one is supposed to be stuck in that just numbing area. Like, you should go next into solution area. And so definitely like being mindful of like, okay, when you're ready to stop your medications or when you're ready to move on to the next chapter or who's it, what may be, you need to be able to make that call for yourself.
I think that's a really good thing to say, because it is a thing. Like, everyone's gonna just start relying on medication that some people can't even afford. And then they're so used to feeling a certain way that they're going to go stir crazy.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate you sharing with us and our besties online. But okay, we'll close out this session with, what is the importance of seeking help in the power of community support? I feel like you've already emphasized it, but like, do you seek out help through community support even now through this journey of yours?
Yes. I think that one thing that my sister actually told me growing up when we lived together that has stuck with me till this day is, just because you're sad doesn't mean you need to make everyone around you feel sad. And that really did hit me in a sense of, yes, people have limits. Like, look, like, seek help from your friends, family, whoever it may be. But at the same time, if they're not a professional, they're not going to be able to help you fully in a way that, like, you know, will be beneficial to you and also beneficial to them. I think seeking help, professional help, is important if, like, you're not able to get, you know, constructive, like, answer or even handle constructive criticism from friends. It's, like, easier to go to someone that, you know, you have no tie to. But community is, like, huge. Being open and vulnerable with people that you care and love that also care about you is, like, important. And I definitely believe that, like, you should never keep it to yourself or stay silent. You should talk about it with somebody.
I'm with you. And when I think of community, I think of
God. Mm-hmm. And I think of, like, oh, my brothers and sisters and everyone that's here for me because God's here for me. Yeah. And he's just doing it through another person.
Yeah.
And that's love.
Yeah.
So I think of community support. It definitely helps me. I do share a lot. Probably share more than I should, but whatever. But whatever. I'm very lucky to have a lot of safe spaces that I'm able to do that. And I know how lucky I am. And so I try to create the same space for everyone else too. Yeah. What about you, Sora?
I love that. I think it's piggybacking on what Sunny said. Or I think you said this, but just like speaking things out loud helps drastically how you feel. Have you guys ever had a therapy session where you, went in and you're like, you know what? No, everything's fine. And then you ended up crying the entire session.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things that we suppress that we don't realize is there, until we talk about it and bring it to light. So I think even if you can't get a therapist, even speaking to your friends, your family, or the support system around you, because also they chose to, like, people who want to be there for you will be there for you. Mm-hmm. I always felt guilty releasing that onto my friends sometimes because I felt like it was burdensome. But it does a disservice to people who choose to be in your life and offering, especially when they're offering their help. I think it's like, you know, take a chance and allow yourself to be vulnerable and seek it.
Yeah. Well, that's summing up today's episode, unless you have anything for us, Sunny.
Oh, I want to know, what would your advice be for your kids if they're going through anything? Just a little snippet advice, something that you would say to them.
Jen? You go. Oh, okay. I think my advice would be depending on the situation, because I know there's going to be things that I can't relate to. For example, anxiety. So if my children start going through anxiety, even at a very young age, I know that my husband can see the signs, understand it, and be able to support them. And I think it just, me creating a safe space for them to share, even if I don't understand. Because I want to be there for them, but I might not be the right person they're talking to. Yeah. And that's okay. Just making sure that they are talking to someone I trust that is going to guide them. Because at that age, if they can understand something is wrong, then that means that they're making their own decisions when they're in school. Or making their own decisions when they're playing sports or in music class or whatever extracurricular that they're doing. And I want them to feel loved and supported, even if we're not there.
Yeah.
What about you, Sarah?
I love that. I don't know, because, you know, we're going to be such different people mm-hmm. then when the time comes. And I know, asking my mom today, which I feel like it's going to be my problem, she always goes, I don't know. Whenever I'm like, what did you do when you went through this? Or like, you know, how was it like at your age? And she's like, I don't remember. So I actually started a notebook to Emma. Oh, okay. I started it when I was pregnant. And I started writing letters. And I kind of like mark it, like, when you're feeling alone or when you are in love or things like that. And I just add on to it as I go. Because sometimes I just wish I knew what my mom went through at my age. Because either way, I don't think I would have listened to her advice. I just want to know what you did. Yeah. You know, I just want to know your experience. Maybe I'll learn from it. But she may not want to know what my advice is at that time. Mm-hmm. But I hope to and plan to give her that notebook when she's like 18 maybe, or going off to college. When I'm not that. There, maybe yeah. she can open it up and, you know, read.
Maybe I should do that.
Yeah, because yeah, you, to like, time. Forget to. Girl, but, like, sometimes you forget to. Or, like, make a voice note when mm-hmm. you're in the car, mm-hmm. you know? But,
I like, do that.
You may not always remember what you went through at this moment mm-hmm. 10 years from now. I don't remember what happened 10 years from now in every moment.
So. I know. I don't either. I really do love that, because
my mom used to teach us, like, oh, there's good and bad in everyone, mm-hmm. and including herself. So she never criticized who I was friends with or anything. She would just say, like, hey, I really like that your friend did this. And try to take that on. You know, like, hey, that's a good trait. Or she tried to exemplify that when she saw good things. And when she saw bad things, she wouldn't shame me for being their friend. She'd be like, hey, I don't really like that your friend did that. But then other than that, she never told me, like, stop hanging out with somebody. Because she wanted us to make our own decisions.
I love that.
So I want to implement that, even though it's very, very hard. I think the reason why my mom was able to do that, because she has so many kids.
Yeah.
And she was working 9 to 9. So she wasn't there. And so she just had to trust that we made the right decisions for ourselves. And I think our lives are going to be a lot different, where we're going to be a lot more involved. So it's going to be really hard for us to be, like, not a little bit more detached. But I do love that she implemented making your own decisions, like what's right and wrong for you.
Yeah. I think that also, because your sisters are all pretty, like, independent, I would say. And very, you guys trust your own instincts. You guys go after what you guys want.
And we're very vocal.
Very vocal, all of you guys. And I think that helped you guys gain that ability to do it and choose for yourselves.
Yeah. Ka always says all the time, like, we're so confident even when we're wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you're so wrong, but you're so confident. And I'm like, whatever. I'll correct myself once I'm, you know, I'm figuring it out. But it's fine. But yeah, I mean, really, really appreciate you for joining this episode, especially with World Mental Health Day just passing. And we just really appreciate you. You're just the first girly guest, and we're just so happy.
Thanks for having me. We loved hearing your story.
Yes, we really loved it. And if you guys love hearing Sunny's story, let us know, or we might not ever bring her back. Oh, okay. Just kidding.
Vote it up.
I'm just kidding. Okay, we'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye.